president finally arrived in Utah.
And after such a great argument why no one in their right mind would ever run for Salt Lake City mayor, Jim DeBacchus is in the race.
And the long-awaited Apple Watch in stores tomorrow. This is Both Sides of the Aisle, but first this news. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center, and on the right, Speaker of the House Greg Hughes.
Good morning, Natalie.
And on the left, Senator Jim DeBacchus.
Hi, Natalie.
And I could have said candidate for mayor of Salt Lake City.
What Jim? Were you thinking?
I don't know. You know, I spent a day and I called everybody from the top of the avenues to 21st South, from the far east all the way to the far western part of the city. I talked to dozens of people and I'm running anyway.
You mentioned you were going to Red Rock to get some good whispering from, the senior fathers of the Colorado
that's
Plateau.
Who's going to smoke peyote? For
Red Rock, I was talking about the brewing place. What are you talking about? To get inspiration.
Jim, you made, I thought, one of the strongest arguments of why running for office, if you're going to do it, you're a guy that's not going to go in halfway, you're all in. But what you described by way of schedule of a engaged, active candidate, the walking, the knocking on doors, everything that you would have to do, you had me ready to never run for re-election again. What I mean, I thought that was a pretty good understanding of the pain, the challenge. I thought you talked yourself right out of it in our last program. What made you decide to go ahead and throw your hat in the ring?
You know, it's the part that the public doesn't kind of see. And I suppose that you got to have an ego and be ambitious to run for political office, right? I mean, you got to have a pretty good opinion
Absolutely.
Of yourself, or you're not going to be there. But, you know, it's a hard thing. And I look around, who's going to run against Mike Lee? Who has the guts to run against an incumbent sitting governor with $2 or $3 million? It's a very, very hard decision to make. I mean, people coming at you, the humiliation factor is there, especially when you've got a whole team of people that are looking for every mistake you've ever made. And you got to be out there. You got to be totally committed. And I'm not just talking about me. I'm talking about every single person, except for Lyle Hilliard, that has to get out there and decide to run, raise $400,000 or $500,000. I mean, this is tough.
Well, you can just look in seat cushions for that. The rest of us have a harder time. You know, I hadn't thought of this before, but when you were the chair of the Democrat Party, this was one of the things you had to do. You had to probably sit in a living room with a prospective candidate looking at a popular incumbent and really
recruit.
Tell them why it made sense to do it, right?
Man, and it's hard to look them in the eye, somebody from Utah County that you know has no chance, and say to them why it's good for America for them to run. You know, and I learned early on it does nobody any good to exaggerate or to not, to give them the real scoop. You have a real shot here, or you know what? You're taking one for the team because blah, 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 blah. It's
really interesting.
Hard.
Well,
you mentioned, Senator Lee and candidates, against Senator Lee or whatever. And I want to save that for the second segment, but keep those ideas fresh. Let's talk for a minute about President Obama, sort of the post-Obama visit. How was it? What did we see happening? I actually saw an awful lot of confusion in the sort of build-up to his visit.
I'll say that I saw it from my vantage point. My business partner, his children sing in the Madeleine Choir, the Catholic Church, the cathedral they have, and they have a private school that they go to. Well, it was said that the President of the United States is coming to Mass, that he's going to be there, that the kids are going to sing, and it's going to be the biggest deal. And I had told my business partner called. I don't know why people thought I would know. I'm not a Democrat, and he didn't. I never got the call, so I don't know why I would be a source of information. But I just said, if you don't see Secret Service crawling over that place right now, chances are he's
happen.
A no-show.
I have an office in the Salt Lake Chamber building where Disney is located. And they're, a tech company doing lots of creative, neat things. And, there was advance notice that he may be coming to visit Disney. And same old thing. A lot of people get their expectations up, then it's gone.
No.
Probably most of those things are just dead rumors. That the White House probably wouldn't even know what's going on. And I said relatively early on, it's not fair to say we've actually sat down and watched a basketball game, but I've shaken hands and talked to the president three times. And I said, look, whoever, can you take my two tickets, if indeed I was scheduled to get any tickets at all, or one or half a ticket or anywhere to get in there, I would rather have some of those amazing, incredible, dedicated Democrats that worked so long and so hard and so amazingly and coordinated visits to Colorado and worked their guts out. I'd much rather have them go and see and have this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. So they never got back to me. So either they gave away the tickets or they never intended to invite me anyway. But either way, I think it will, this doesn't count as a visit. He didn't visit Utah. He visited Hill. And he needs to come have a public event.
I guess the governor drove up with him in the car. I mean, they had a 30-minute conversation. That was pretty good.
Maybe that's why I wasn't invited.
Yeah,
I might have
maybe
had a different opinion.
Maybe.
They would have locked you in the trunk.
They would have.
They
would have
given
me
you the ride home.
Yeah. They would have. Yeah, they wouldn't have let me in.
But I think it's interesting because this president is known as a very different type of president. The way he was elected was different. And when I say that, what I'm meaning is a very cerebral, maybe an introvert, doesn't want to spend as much time in the public eye as maybe like a Bill Clinton did. And I think we saw that during this visit. It was very targeted, very select, in and out.
Can I make a – I have an idea here. I've heard what you've just said about the president's relationship with U.S. Congress. Mm-hmm. I've heard from former Tip O'Neill chief of staff, now political pundit Chris Matthews, that this president's relationship with Democrat members of – Congress, House and Senate, is terrible. That they don't sit and brainstorm. They don't talk aspirational. There is none of that relationship that has happened between our President of the United States and our Congress. There is no relationship there. And doesn't that kind of help us understand why we see maybe some of the – everything just seems so absolutely – gridlock beyond what we typically say and is cliche to say about Congress. It seems as bad as it could ever be right now.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think of that, Jim?
I made it a point to try to get the president here personally because I think he's going to warm everybody up and they'll understand things. We put up a website. We had over 10,000 Utahns petition the president to come, and we got through the House, and I think I talked to Greg and said, should we put this resolution through the Senate, through the House or not? And I think he said, I'd just do the Senate if I were you. Because we could have ended up having a resolution inviting the president, his lovely daughters, and his wife to visit our national parks. And the House might have gotten, yeah, we don't think so. So we got it through the Senate. We only had 5 dissenting votes. So I feel like Utah did invite him. He did come 49th out of the 50 states, but he came.
He spent the night.
But he didn't see the great wonders of Utah. He's a guy from Chicago and Hawaii. He needs to see the majesty of the most beautiful real estate in the world. And
Since he owns most of it.
Yeah,
Greg.
Since he owns it. You want him to just take more of it. Forget that. Well, let's just show him some more pavement.
Well, and he did
let's
get
show
a,
him asphalt.
I mean, I think
that's
some people, when they hear the president's coming to town, worry that there's going to be another, you know, day on the side of the Grand Canyon, designating new wilderness areas. And we got away with that not happening, Greg,
that's
thankfully.
Right.
I know Jim feels otherwise, but...
You know, I'll tell you, I was teaching a class with Minority Leader Brian King, and it was a liberal crowd, as per Brian King, the minority leader.
It's like
a
law, illegal?
Yeah.
A
no, was that, I can't remember what the group was. Okay. It was up at Fort Douglas. But anyway, there were some people that were worried that when the president arrives at being a red state, you'd see maybe some Tea Party or conservatives protesting the president. I made it a note that, I didn't think you'd see that, which we didn't, but B, that's only reserved for when Republican presidents come here, the kind of war protests and the kind of protests that George W. Bush saw when he arrived in Utah, that he certainly was received with protests. So I try to tell the person left-leaning, worrying about all this embarrassing protest. No. We've had Democrats or people that have not liked George W. Bush do it, but I don't think you'll see it here, and you haven't with President Obama, and we didn't. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm one U.S. citizen that was grateful for the visit.
Yep, me too.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm joined by Greg Hughes on the right, Jim DeBacchus on the left. In our next segment, we're going to talk about who will challenge Senator Lee in the U.S. Senate.
This is Jim DeBacchus, proudly on the left.
Greg Hughes on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. So, new poll out basically says that Senator Lee is pretty well positioned. It says that if he did have challengers, Josh Romney would be the strongest intra-party challenger. Thomas Wright actually had a very small, not a lot of name ID, I'm guessing, and just, you know, didn't poll as well there. But then it also showed that on the Democratic side that Jim Matheson has a lot of potential in that race. What do you guys see happening? I mean, this is the U.S. Senate, and here's a senator that's been a bit controversial because of the government shutdown, but he seems to have recovered quite nicely, Greg.
I think that he has recovered as well as you would ever want to or could in this situation, at least with the narrative. There was this idea that the old school Republicans, maybe the establishment of the Republican Party, were done with him. You saw that maybe in the sentiments from John Huntsman Sr. when mm-hmm. he said that he identified Senator Lee as an embarrassment. You started to really wonder whether there was going to be our establishment Republican Party was going to come after Senator Lee. And then there was the announcement that former Governor John Huntsman Jr. and Zions Bank CEO Scott Anderson were his finance committee co-chairmen.
And
that's
just
the very group we're talking about. That's
yeah,
kind of
the
establishment.
That's what I'm saying. They're the moderates.
So there you go. If they are firmly in the Mike Lee camp, then I've got to guess that there isn't this moderate insurgency coming against Mike Lee. But Matheson, I've always watched Matheson. I've been wondering if he's going to run for a statewide office. I think he's the Democrats' best chance, mm-hmm. but I don't know. He's just joined this law firm or whatever in D.C. It looks like he's beginning a lobbying career.
I think they start to get a life again, and they kind of like it.
Yeah, so I don't know what his plan is, but certainly I think the Matheson name is one that carries across the state.
I'm guessing, Senator DeBacchus, you have strong feelings on this one.
Look, Mike Lee hasn't changed his stripes. He is still the most conservative senator ever in Utah history by vote. He's an embarrassment to the state. He's everything that is wrong with Washington. He is the reason why Republicans and Democrats are not sitting down, why they're not getting things done. He just plain is an ideologue. You know, you may agree with his ideology, which yeah. probably makes it okay, but we are not going to solve this country's problems with Schumer and Mike Lee.
It's funny. I thought of Schumer when you were saying that.
And until we recognize that, and until moderate Republicans face up to the fact that we need people like Thomas Wright, we need moderate, reasonable people that will roll up their sleeves, sit at the table, gulp twice, and start solving the country's problems, not hysterical. Look who the Republicans are running for president. I mean, this is an embarrassment of awfulness. Ted Cruz, Rick Perry, Santorum. I mean, do I need to go down? Who's that doctor? Dr. Ben Casey? What's his name?
Carson.
I mean,
Ben Carson. Rand Paul.
Rand Paul.
These are respectable people.
They're
Jim.
Not respectable. And
who do you have on the Democrats? You got Hillary. We've seen that show.
Hillary is not in the same camp as these ideologues. You can put Jeb Bush over as a moderately reasonable person who could be president. But this cabal of crazies is not going to bring the country where it needs to go. And I'm afraid that until moderate, reasonable Republicans in Utah begin to understand that we're not really going to change the state and we're not going to change Washington until they belly up and stand up to the caucus extremists, we're going to continue to have people that don't represent Utah well, and more important than that, don't allow the country to go where it needs to go in solving our problems.
So let me just give an example of something that could happen. The bellwether issue I'm going to watch in the Lee race is immigration policy. And I'm going to put a Utah spin on this because we have this really strong economy, maybe the strongest in the country right now, you know, in a broad sweep of measures.
Thanks, Obama.
Thanks, Governor Herbert. but what's happening is we have this really low unemployment rate, and we have rapid job growth. And eventually they're going to come at odds. Mm. There's just not the labor supply that you need. You have to have labor to grow an economy. So what do you need? You have a shortage of high-tech workers, and you have a shortage of hourly workers. And those are the two things that immigrants provide. So from the moderate point of view, and to people like, I'm guessing, Scott Anderson, potentially former Governor John Huntsman, we want to see Lee make some progress there, and maybe that's going to happen. If that happens, then I'm optimistic that he's kind of rounded out more as a candidate and as a senator.
Well, Marco Rubio, Senator Rubio, coming from immigrant parents from Cuba and having a touch on that part of policy, personal experience, began that dialogue and got pummeled in the Republican ranks and has since kind of retreated from that mm-hmm. and has kind of walked that back.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem that we're going to see on both sides with the parties. You're
going to
see
yes,
this on the Democrat side as well.
Yeah.
You're going to see that they cannot really signal, Natalie, what you're talking about, because to do that, you're not going to appeal to your base, which makes your candidacy
and
within a primary cycle very...
And I think this is the problem with the Republican Party.
But it's not... It's the Democrat Party as well. They're going to have the same problem.
You know, I don't... Hillary's going to have to... the middle kind of lady. You know, you got Elizabeth Warren, and she... it'll be interesting, but there was... The Washington Post was in town. Let me just tell a little story here, because I think it fits in what we're talking about. Doing a story on... And they talked to everybody on the non-discrimination. So they wanted a picture of Steve Urquhart and I in the room where we did a lot of the negotiating. So Steve was sitting there and I was there and the photographer was taking pictures and the reporter was asking us questions and the reporter from Washington said, "What is this? You are a conservative Mormon, very rural, from a very far away from the mm-hmm. progressive part of the state.
Not as far away as you
Republican,
get.
Republican, ultra-conservative, really. And what are you doing with DeBacchus, who's progressive, who's this, who's that, who represents this?" And
crazy.
Reckless,
yeah. And so Steve goes over and goes, "You know, DeBacchus is just dead wrong on everything except this." "And so why can't we roll up our sleeves and work together on that?" And he said, "Who knows? In a year or two or three, we may come up with one more issue where we'll attack the world." You know what? That's what makes America work. It is where we concentrate on the things that bring us together. And we don't have to cave on our moral issues, but we forego that great temptation to be a demagogue to the part of our parties that we know we can satiate by going crazy. Because the victim in all of that is good public policy. That's my vision of what public service needs to be.
So I hate to go back to that class that I was with. It's called Osher, and it was at
Great University of Utah program for seniors.
And it was great. In fact, we got a great listener that pulls herself away from this program to go to that class that I was introduced to. But anyway, Brian King and I've been in a meeting where the two of us will kind of dialogue on different issues and because we don't see the world the same, but we're friends. And he always says, "It drives my Democrat friends crazy when I tell them that I get along well and I like Greg Hughes." And I said, "Well, I don't even say it. I won't even say it out loud because I just get pummeled if I say I like Brian King. So I won't even mention that we're friends." But that joking aside, I think there are people in politics, especially with what we have going on nationally, that are almost being conditioned that we're supposed to be bashing each other's heads in. And
the classic example of that is Orrin Hatch and Ted Kennedy.
Yeah, that's right.
They did a lot of things in Washington together.
And Senator Hatch was honored at the Kennedy Center recently at the big opening. I just want to say about Greg, you know, when you're the speaker of everybody. There is a majority and a minority leader,
but you're right.
You're the speaker for both sides of the aisle. And there came a very contentious issue that a lot of Republicans just didn't want to talk about, and they didn't want to vote, and they didn't want to do it. And Greg, I thought in one of the most magnanimous moments of the entire legislative session, he said, "You know what? They may be a relatively small minority, but they have a right to do this, and I'm going to let this happen, and I'm going to let the vote," and I'm sure he took some hell for it in his caucus. But even if you don't agree with people, it's good to have this kind of airing and things. I think
it's
good
part
for
of the process. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I am joined by Greg Hughes and Jim DeBacchus. Jim, you made the comment about something that makes America work, and I'm all excited because tomorrow we get Apple Watch. What makes America work but the innovation of this incredible company? And I don't know what's going to happen with the Apple Watch. Will it, you know, be a boondoggle or will it be the next great thing? But from the research I've done, I'm very excited and I'm going to order me one.
What's it going to, I mean, tell me what it's going to do.
So you wear it on your wrist and it syncs with your iPhone and it basically does a lot of what your iPhone does, but it's just right there. And it's done in a way that has sensors, so it can, you know, monitor things about your activity level. It can remind you of things happening without you pulling something out of your pocket.
What
you
I
got
love
the weather
is, yeah,
with your thing. You can do a Mickey Mouse watch and all these other.
Well, you can
faces.
Check a text without having to pull it. So I'm in
yeah.
a meeting.
Yeah.
My
just
wife's always hit me in the side of the head when we're yeah. talking to people. And I pull up my phone. I look at a text when we're talking.
Yeah,
or I mean, I'm supposed to be
that.
Otherwise engaged. I can, in a more clandestine way,
yeah.
always be reading my text now by just glancing down at my wrist.
It basically puts personal computing right there, Jim. I'm holding my wrist.
So, Greg, that's going to make me feel much more comfortable. Rather than looking at a text, you're going to be continually looking at your watch as
that's
I'm
right.
talking to you.
yeah, that always works. Maybe I didn't think this through. I think you might be right. Staring at my watch isn't going to be a great message.
But,
either.
You know, when you think about it, the technology of having a little iPod,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of one of the big things, it was all out there, you know, digital music mm-hmm. and using mm-hmm. the internet and sharing all that. But somehow you got to get the chicken and the egg together and you got to get people to buy into
yeah.
it and you got to think of how we're going to get all of this done. I mean, it's this wonderful combination of both design and bureaucracy.
It's
and
design
all
and
the
science.
Work.
It's design and science coming together. And, you know, for those of you listening, if you go to the Apple stores in Utah on Friday, Saturday, whatever, I mean, all the people are going to be in different color shirts. They've all been trained how to sell this watch. You have to register to actually have the appointment to learn about them. 15-minute increments. That's
wow.
that's what a big deal it's going to be. Well, we can't end this program, you guys, without talking for just a minute about the inmate that died at the Utah State Prison because of a failure for a medical contractor to show up and give this gentleman dialysis.
Yep.
This is the latest problem to fall on Governor Herbert's lap. Greg, I don't know if you have any insight on this, but a really troubling situation where someone who's under the state's watch doesn't get the care they need.
You know, there was a I got the call. Governor's office was good enough to let me know before it became a story that something tragic had occurred. And you know, they've had a breakdown. There has been some challenges with corrections in the past, and mm-hmm. we really thought we were getting through a lot of that. And this was one that there was poor communication on all fronts.
Mm.
And and I'll tell you that for any department head, the buck stops with that department head. For the governor, it's an executive mm-hmm. branch endeavor, and so there's, you know, I think appropriately everyone's feeling that, and mm-hmm. no one is
and asking for the right
correct.
Investigations, get the facts out.
So
there
has been those steps taken, and these answers will come. But it is, I think, everyone just it's a terrible turn of events, and it wasn't just this one individual. There were people that had to be taken to the hospital, and that is not something. There is no margin of error for this type of medical.
Care. The paper made it sound like one tech didn't show up for 2 days and therefore this gentleman died. I didn't know there were others. How – I mean, it seems to me that if you have that kind of responsibility, whether it's children we have that we as a state have custody for or prisoners, that – you take that responsibility. You don't just leave it up to one guy,
yeah.
do you? I mean,
yeah.
that seems
there's
weird.
There's a person there that oversees that entire effort on premise all the time. There is a process when that happens.
I have a certain empathy for the governor's office because state government is arguably the largest corporation in the state. And when these things happen, it comes right to the governor's, you know, footstep. I remember when Syncrete happened on I-15. Those of you that remember that under Governor Bangeter,
yep.
even the pumps in Great Salt Lake had some controversy. But it's amazing what comes. We have got to go to gripes. I don't know who's ready with a good gripe, but Jim, you want to go first?
Well, I thought the NC2A basketball was terrific. I thought it was fun. I enjoyed the games, and I say more power to the NC2A as a way to bring the country together. Wouldn't it be cool if we could find political issues and bring the country united and fun and together the way that that sports do.
And the good old Utes lost to the eventual champion, so that gives you some sort
it
of
does.
Good feeling.
And they
as a
played
Ute.
Them tough. I mean, they did play
Look
them
Look at that.
Tough.
He said something nice about
know,
the Utes.
I know. It pains me. I shouldn't. You guys are wearing off on me. That's terrible. Here's my gripe, and it goes back to the president's visit. I do think that it was not a very well-coordinated visit. I do think – I don't know where that falls. I know there was a major announcement in the Rose Garden with the talks with Iran, which did hold it up, which is legitimate. But for all the people that were preparing for visits that were never going to happen and for just kind of the – it just was
and
very –
And being the 49th.
And I just think that
– Have us be like the 35th, like it
seen,
falls in with our population.
You see pictures. There's a picture of Bill Clinton when he was a young boy getting to meet JFK. These are moments that live forever, and I don't feel that Utah really got its moment with this president. I think that was a missed opportunity.
Wonder why, Greg.
But that's fair, don't you think, Jim? He's supposed to be president to all of us.
Well, if our Senate and our delegation in Washington would be a little bit more reasonable.
I'll tell you, I'm not going to do a gripe. I'm just going to wish my dear mother, Marcia Egan, who turned 93 last week, a very happy birthday. I love you, Mother. I don't know if my companions here want to say anything to Marcia.
Marcia, happy, happy, happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle, the programs produced by Ross Chambliss.